Hi, this is Jimmy Lee Wirt, producer of the Ralph Nader Radio Hour, and welcome to The Wrap-Up, where Ralph weighs in on the question of Bernie Sanders versus Elizabeth Warren.
This was from Stephen Gonzalez, and the subject is Sanders versus Warren. And he says, "Dear Ralph, can you talk about the difference between the two candidates? The most I've heard from you is regarding their use of rhetoric, language about structural change versus political revolution. Can you also talk about each candidate's support for Medicare for All, their lifelong political commitments, the comprehensiveness of their environmental plans? Are you concerned that Warren, while pledging not to take corporate money in the general election, has said she would raise corporate money for the DNC, the Democratic National Committee? Should we be concerned that she does not yet have a plan for how we pay for Medicare for All, although actually she has come out with a plan since this question was submitted? Can you talk about each candidate's representation in the media? Ultimately, which candidate do you think is better?"
Well, Elizabeth Warren supports a better bill, the one in the House of Representatives supported by 140 Democrats so far, a majority of the Democrats in the House. Bernie has a less better bill in the Senate. And so the answer to the question is, as of now, Elizabeth's support of the House bill is better than Bernie's support of his own bill in the Senate. The second is taking corporate money. If she becomes the nominee, she has to make peace with the Democratic National Committee and all the committees in all the states. You can't fight your own party. And it's up to her to prove that she can raise adequate money online, just the way Bernie Sanders did when he almost won the nomination, except for the dirty tricks by the Hillary crowd in 2016 and the DNC, which was for Hillary. So I wouldn't rush to judgment if I was Elizabeth Warren. She may raise over $1 billion just online in small denominations, $27, $30 average. Ultimately, which candidate do you think is better? It's hard to project how they would operate under pressure. Let's face it, they're the best two candidates the Democrats have put forth in many years, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. But if they're in the White House and they're surrounded by corporations and corporate indentured politicians on the Hill, they're going to rely on you, people. And if you don't organize, demonstrate, march, buttonhole your senators, representatives, throw them out of office if they don't shape up, what do you expect them to do in the White House when they can come forward and there's nobody behind them to support them? And the corporate is saying to Bernie or Elizabeth, "If you do this on healthcare, the stock market will crash. You do this on taxing Wall Street, which is under tax, and the stock market will crash. And that means that the pension funds will be worth less." Don't think you're ever going to get a president up by and for the people without the people organizing. Doesn't mean tens of millions, just means a few million spread throughout congressional districts. You control Congress, you can give big backing to Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders should they win the presidency.
Warren did outline how she would pay for Medicare for All, and it's different than what Bernie is saying, because Bernie has been up front and saying, yeah, your taxes are going to rise, but that will be completely offset by what you'll save on the other end through premiums and deductibles and co-pays and all those other things. Strategically, though, it seems like a lot of those things that Bernie is talking about that are offsetting the higher taxes are generally hidden from people, you know, because it has to do with, you know, what the companies are paying and all of that. It's not such a direct benefit that people actually see. So strategically, do you think Warren has got a better plan, or do you think Bernie, just being straightforward and saying all of these things will be more than offset by the taxes that will be raised?
I think both of them have the wrong approach to explain full Medicare for all, everybody in, nobody out, free choice of doctor and hospital, better outcomes, far less mortality due to the lack of health insurance, which doesn't exist in Canada because they have health insurance for everybody. The way you start, Steve, is not with a complicated set of tax increases here and there, which is befuddling even supporters of Elizabeth Warren, or a more vague approach, which is accurate by Bernie, that you will save more by not having to pay premiums out of pocket than the increased taxes, which will be mostly on the wealthy and the Wall Street transaction tax and so on. You start this way. Canada has had, since the late 1960s, a full Medicare for all. People have one card in their pocket. They get sick, they go, they show the card, they don't even see a bill. When you're sick in Canada, you go to see a doctor or go to a hospital. They ask, what's your problem? In the U.S., they ask, what's your insurance? So you start with the following. If Canada can cover everybody at $5,000 or less per capita per year on the average, and we don't cover everybody and still pay $10,000 per capita on the average, leaving 30 million without coverage and 50 million under coverage, that means that we can cut our expenses in half easily. So we start out with, how are you going to pay for full Medicare for all? Simple. We've got a system that's going to cut the expenses in half to begin with. The rest is a piece of cake. We'll just increase the tax to where it was under the Eisenhower years on the wealthy, increase the taxes, which are not taxed now, on Wall Street transactions, have increased in some of the sin taxes, and we'll have plenty. They ought to start with that per capita average, because what Warren and Bernie are going to be trapped by is a huge corporate-dominated, bloated, greedy, profiteering, pricing drugs and hospital days like crazy. And you can't control that with a single payer unless you address the cost reductions. And that's what they haven't paid enough attention to. The bills are so complicated that they've produced $350 billion in fraud in the U.S. every year, according to the expert on this, we mentioned many times, Malcolm Sparrow at Harvard University, and another study by Congress in the early 90s. Now, you don't see that in Canada because it's a single payer. You don't have 1,500 insurance companies, all kinds of intermediaries, unbundled, very complex, inscrutable billings that people are floored by. You don't see that. They don't talk about that. You see what I mean? You start with, this is an immensely less expensive healthcare system. 5,000 compared to over 10,000. 5,000 covers everybody. The 10,000 leaves tens of millions out. That's how you start. Once you cut it down to the Canadian level, and the Canadians love their system, then you can talk about how to pay for it. But if you start with the bloated system that's going to blow any Medicare for all system sky high, if it doesn't control drug prices, if it doesn't provide budgets for hospitals, et cetera, it's never going to work. The corporate greed will destroy it on the installment plan. I agree, there's a transition period of probably 4 years where you have to ease out of the present corrupt, bloated system and ease in. But I don't recall anybody who had a health insurance plan privately funded in the early 1960s get upset when Medicare came in for the elderly. They didn't say, oh, you're going to take my private plan away, says a 72-year-old woman or a 69-year-old man. No, they just picked up the Medicare card, and the company didn't have to insure them on their insurance plan. The hidden ally here is the corporations would love to get rid of having to insure their employees.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
But, that appeal is not made by Bernie and Elizabeth enough. General Motors is spending more on healthcare than on steel and rubber combined.
Right. Wow.
Now, they will be given a tax, but it won't be as much as they're paying now. And then there are all the headaches of administrating it that corporate executives are tired of, that they'll be relieved of. So that's why we want citizen leaders in the healthcare business to have congressional hearings where they can testify.
Well, the headline for me that I think relates to people's the thing you said about when you get sick in Canada, they ask you, what's your problem? When you get sick in America, they ask you, what's your insurance? I think
and that is your problem.
That.
Your problem is your insurance.
Then ends up being your problem, yes. But that simple little meme, put on a t-shirt, put on buttons, I think people will understand it, because I am amazed at how people in my circle, college-educated people, we're the, skull intellectual elite, they don't even understand what system we're talking about. They don't know the difference between the English system, which is total nationalization, versus the Canadian system, which is what we talked about, privately delivered, national health insurance.
Public insurance, private delivery, free right. choice of doctor and hospital. No matter how little you earn or how a lot you earn, it's very egalitarian.
But people do not understand that. And I think you've probably right. hit on something that both Sanders and Warren are not boiling it down to those simple things. It's
Let me just put it this way. I put out a pamphlet called 25 Ways Life is Better in Canada in the U.S. because they have full Medicare for All. It's on the website singlepayeraction.org. You can download it and print a million copies if you'd like. Singlepayeraction.org. Those are the arguments that Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and others down at the local and state level running for election next year should be making. And also, it comes down, Steve and David, to the absence of anxiety, dread, and fear every day that right. operates in this country and does not prevail in Canada. There's right. nobody in Canada who dies because they can't afford health insurance to get diagnosed and treated in time. About 40,000 people, 800 or so a week, die in the U.S. because they cannot afford health insurance to get diagnosed and treated in time. And hundreds of thousands of people with injuries and illnesses continue to have them because they can't afford diagnosis and treatment in time. And tens of millions fear that same possibility. Anxiety, dread, fear. That's something everybody understands in the USA. It's lost in the welter of how you're going to pay for it. And Bernie and Elizabeth are thrown on the defensive. I mean, this guy, Peter Buttigieg, he's throwing Bernie and Elizabeth on the defensive. He doesn't have a plan worth talking about. The mayor of South Bend.
Right.
Or
Nancy Pelosi, who's doing the same thing.
Because they don't start with how come the Canadians, who aren't any smarter than we are, cover everybody for $5,000 or less average per capita, and we can't cover tens of millions, and the charge here already is over $10,000 per capita.
But they'll say, listen, Canada is smaller. It's not as diverse. You really can't scale it up here. What would you say to that?
What are you talking about? Canada has a lot of minorities. They have a population that looks like us. And when a patient goes for surgery in Canada and 10 patients go for the same surgery in the U.S., you just develop the proportion. The key is, what is the one person paying per capita, and what is the 10 people individually paying per capita? Of course, it's going to cost more in a macro sense in the U.S. because we're 10 times the population. But the real fact is, what does it cost on the average per capita? In Canada, free choice of doctor and hospital, you don't really see a bill, no anxiety, dread, and fear, lives saved, injuries dealt with, illnesses treated, and they do it on half the price, and we can't even do it on double the price, and we cover only about 80% of the people or so, and the rest are left to fester and to be ridden with fear, anxiety, and dread. So the fact that they're a smaller country doesn't mean that. They use the same technologies, MRIs, pharmaceuticals. They just don't let these companies get away with skyrocketing gouging, price gouging. You go to have an MRI in Toronto, you don't pay anywhere near what they pay in Buffalo. Same machine produced by the same manufacturer.
Well, here's another question I hear a lot. What about doctors? Will doctors get paid less, and will that cause a shortage of doctors and nurses?
Doctors will get paid less. You won't see a doctor in Canada making $2, $3 million as a cardiovascular surgeon or an anesthesiologist making $1 million. I think the top amount that doctors in Canada make are about $400,000 to $500,000. But they're able to practice medicine. They don't have to deal with bills, denials mm-hmm. of treatment that they want to apply to their patient by health insurance operative miles away, constant conflict, having to hire a secretary full-time for every doctor just to deal with the paperwork. So they do make less on the average, but they do the work they love.
And they also don't have the bills that they have to pay for their education, which makes them go into
debt,
high-paying specialties because they're in debt.
Correct.
Because we do have a shortage of general practitioners, do we not?
Yes, and medical school debt is a factor. They go into the specialties to make more money. So we should learn from A to Z from Canada. No, they have problems in Canada. No system is perfect, but compared to what we're having in this country, it's amazing. We don't have a million people every week rallying somewhere in the country to get what the Canadians have. I've asked some Canadians to hire buses, fill them with Canadians who've experienced the healthcare system, and drive throughout the U.S. to disabuse Americans of the corporate propaganda that they've been subjected to.
Rand Paul got his hernia surgery in Canada, Mr. For Libertarian.
For a third of the price he would have had to pay in Texas. And he got 4 days in a hospital with three meals a day and checkups to make sure there was no infection coming as a result of the surgery. He was very satisfied, but he still doesn't want single payer.
If we have time, can we just circle back to tactics? Because as you've pointed out, corporations love socialism when it's for them. Obama went to the pharmaceutical industry and the health insurance lobbyists to pre-clear Obamacare. Tactically right. speaking, if a President Sanders or a President Warren gathered all the corporate titans into the Oval Office, except Aetna, the people from Blue Cross, Anthem, and said, I want to give you a bailout here. Get behind this. What would their response be? Does the president have that much power to jawbone the industrialists into accepting what is essentially, socialized health insurance?
Well, I don't think they have to be jawboned. I think corporations are sick and tired of the time, detail, conflict, wrangling with health insurance companies that the company is paying along with a copay to cover their workers. I think they would love to be relieved of that burden, and they should be natural allies of any president that wants a single-payer system. When Jack Smith was president of GM Canada, and he was promoted to become president of GM International in Detroit, he was asked about the Canadian healthcare system. He said it worked pretty good when I was up there, but he didn't want to say, that's what we should have down here, south of the border from Canada, because he didn't want to engage in a tremendous battle with the powerful health insurance companies. But in his mind, he would love the Canadian system. So would the head of U.S. Steel. So would the head of Kennecott Copper. So I might add with the head of Pfizer, because under single payer, you replace the private health insurance industry. You don't replace the drug industry. You don't replace the hospital industry. But they are given budgets. They are given price restraints. I just read there's a new drug out to deal with melanoma, carcinogenic melanoma, $250,000 per patient for 1 year. Now, let me test both of you. I'm going to ask you, what do you think of when you just heard what I said? What's your reaction?
I wish I did studied math in high school.
I want to see what your reaction is, Steve.
The price of this, $250,000, you said?
1 year per patient.
I mean, well, it means I'm dying if I have this, because I don't have that. Yeah, even I don't have that, and I'm very well off.
It's a pay or die situation in the U.S., which is pretty cruel, why we let them get away with it. But you know what the interesting response would be?
What?
Why don't you break down the $250,000? I want to see all the constituent costs by that company that led them to price it at $250,000, deducting all the federally sponsored research from the National Institutes of Health that they got free, paid right. by the taxpayer. No one ever in Congress, even the ones that denounce these $300,000 a year per patient per year, they don't say, break it up, break it down. I want to see every little cost item that you added up to charge a patient $250,000 for 1 year. You see how inept the counterattack is by humanity?
And because it's not connected to that, it's connected to supply and demand, and they've got supply, and there's a demand with high stakes.
With all the money the drug companies are making, there are now shortages of key drugs. Why are there shortages of key drugs? Because the federal government is not doing its job. They're allowing unbelievable profits, and then they're allowing imports from China and India, and maybe the supply chain is screwed up, and you got patients in hospitals that don't have crucial drugs, and the government doesn't do anything about it. That's why the people have to take over.
Do you challenge your bill? Do you go over it line by line?
Who are you asking, Steve?
I'm asking Ralph. When you get a bill, from a doctor,
But the line by line comes when you're in the hospital. I mean, you just go to a foot doctor or something, you get a simple bill, one line. It's if you have a more complicated procedure where every specialty puts an item in the bill and you can't figure it out, it's code, Medicare code or whatever.
And they don't tell you what it's going to cost.
You cannot go through it. It's impossible for you to go through it. It's like decoding ancient Greeks.
But don't we have a right to say, wait a second, you're charging me $500 for an aspirin? I didn't agree to this. Or did I agree to this?
Yeah, you can challenge that. That you can detect because even if you don't know the code, if they specify, like they were charging 20 years ago in a code blue section of a hospital in California, $8 for shaving a patient. A simple shaving the patient. So you could say, where is that? What they'll tell you is that you got to pay for the overhead, the depreciation, the equipment. I mean, it's just crazy what's going on. We don't have any sheriff on the beat. We don't have any federal cop on the corporate gouging crime beat. And whose fault is that? Of course, it's the people. You start with the government not doing its job. You start with the corporations gouging you. You start with your Congress not representing you. So you get no, right? So people of America, what's your final answer? The final answer is we got to get off our duff and organize in every congressional district, take control of Congress, clean up the elections, corruption, public financing of public campaigns, and with that massive crowbar, begin turning the country around so it's an economy of, by, and for the people, not just the government of, by, and for the people. And we can look our children and grandchildren in the eye and not feel that we've betrayed them because we're too busy playing video games, watching TV, or making excuses for our own powerlessness, which we have cultivated.
And that's a wrap. Join us again next week on the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. Until next time.
Stand up, stand up. You've been sitting right.